one of my favorite state senators. He's a fighter. He's a fighter. Len Susio of Meriden.
Senator, welcome to Brad and Dan, and welcome to our Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair. How are you this morning?
I am thrilled to be on your show and talking to the best radio broadcasters in Connecticut to start my day.
Well, you helped a lot of people's day because you succeeded in getting this study of which Connecticut was going to be a part, the mileage tax study, to be defunded. How did you pull it off?
Well, the key is making certain that the people know what's going on and then giving them a voice, Deanna and Brad. It's that simple. The people can make a difference when they speak out. And as you know, through your show and others, we had a petition. We had people calling their state senator and their state representative. And the pressure was so enormous that they eventually, the politicians had to give in. And last week, as you know, a bill passed the Senate, 36 to nothing. It was unanimous, basically telling the DOT commissioner that he cannot, not only forbidding him to participate in the study, which he originally committed to, which would cost us $300,000, but it said you can't spend a nickel on anything related to a mileage tax, whether it be a study, future studies, going to conferences, buying material. You can do nothing without approval of the legislature, and he has to come back and ask for that approval before he could spend a nickel on anything related to the mileage tax.
Well, you know, Senator, you got it, and there were people that were with you that complimented you. I was over the other afternoon with the Wall of Honor program that the Lieutenant Governor started, and people were talking about it. You know, one of the things that I hear when I'm out, and I'm sure Dan does too, because we discuss mostly everything, is this whole thing about tolls. People saying, how come these other states get through here, they don't have to pay anything. Is the toll finished, or are we going to have a toll? What is your look at this?
Well, the proponents of tolls are not giving up, even though I think the chances are against passing some toll legislation this year. And the people have got to understand that the argument in favor of tolls is based on misleading information and misleading facts. We are told that the Special Transportation Fund, that's the fund where the gas taxes go, they're supposed to be dedicated to road and bridge repair. We're being told that in a couple more years that's going to go into the negative. And largely, people are saying that's because of more fuel-efficient cars and electric cars and things like that. But the truth is that gas consumption has not been decreasing. It's actually been increasing. And then since fiscal year 2013, gas consumption in Connecticut's going up almost 80 million gallons per year.
Wow.
80 million gallons per year. So the argument, one of the main arguments for tolls is that we're not collecting enough money because gas consumption is going down, but that's not true. It's absolutely not true at all. Maybe someday in the future, 20 years from now, who knows? But our gas consumption has been going up every year, and it is up, as I say, 80 million gallons per year in the last 4 years. The other thing that drives the projected deficit that they're talking about is this spending that they're talking about on road and bridge maintenance. And when Governor Malloy became governor back in 2011, Connecticut spent about $276 million per year of state taxpayer money on road and bridge maintenance and another $750 million or so of federal money. We get a big federal subsidy, by the way, for not having tolls, and it's about $750 million per year, and it's conditioned on no tolls. So when he became governor back in 2011, it was $750 million federal money and about $276 million state money. The governor has embarked on an ambitious program in road and bridge maintenance, and he would increase the state share from that $276 million in 2011 to $1.6 billion. That's seven times what we were spending when he came into office. And there's no doubt that we have a lot of catch-up to do on road and bridge maintenance, but we don't have to tuple seven times the spending that we had when he came in. And 2 weeks ago, my Republican colleagues in the Senate released a budget which included the special transportation budget, which showed that we could live without tolls and without increasing gas taxes and do a great job of catching up on road and bridge repair. So the argument for tolls is predicated on two false facts. Gas consumption is not going down, it's going up, and we don't have to sextuple the amount of spending on road and bridge maintenance. We can increase it dramatically. We could double, triple, quadruple it and still not need tolls to fund what we're going to be doing.
Well, Senator, I'm sure you saw the story in the Hartford Courant. It was in Friday's Courant, or maybe Saturday's, but it was on their website on Friday, that shows Connecticut motorists are burning significantly more gasoline than they did 3 years ago. And they also mentioned that we are selling very few electric cars in the state, so that seems to fly into the face of those who say gas tax revenue is down and more people are buying electric cars.
That's right, and that's why people have to understand the argument for tolls is based on basically very misleading information. It's not accurate. The facts are, by the way, the projected deficit in the special transportation fund is based on the assumption that gas consumption is going to go down at 0.5% per year, but it's actually increasing 1 to 2% a year, going in the opposite direction. So when you understand that the facts don't stand up to examination, the whole argument for tolls evaporates. There's other things, too, we could say about the tolls. We could have a whole show on something like that if you wanted to get into it. But, for example, we can't install tolls only at the state border. That would be a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. You can't just put up a toll at the border. The only tolls that we would be allowed to really put up that are practical under the federal law without forfeiting that $750 million a year we're getting from the federal government would be tolls that are based on a concept called congestion pricing, where they would put these electronic gantries, and as you're going by it, depending on the time of day, they would charge you a toll. And the time of day where it would be most expensive would be the rush hour, of course, because they're trying to discourage congestion. And now I ask you, Brad and Dan, who is driving to work during the rush hour? It's not out-of-staters. It's the local folks. So the local folks are going to pay the highest toll prices if we did install tolls for under the congestion pricing scheme.
Do you think they're out for now?
Yeah. I noticed that the proponents in the legislature are still hoping to do something. One thing is they did pass a bill out of the Transportation Committee about studying the need for tolls. But, again, there was a big study done for the Transportation Committee and DOT back 2 years ago, and it was based on all these false assumptions. So if you're going to rig the projections to make certain that they show a crisis and a deficit, well, sure, then you're going to have an argument for tolls. So I don't think we need another study. The facts are very plain and very clear. We don't need tolls to keep our roads and bridges up to snuff and to get them back where they should be. We just need honest politicians who will tell the public the honest facts. It's a misleading arguments and misleading facts that are not true.
18 minutes after 7, we're going to get back to state law. Okay, Daniel, back to our special guest.
Senator Len Susio joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Senator, yesterday the Senate voted to essentially use the rainy day fund and scrub the accounts of 50 state budget line items, I guess, in order to balance the budget in the current fiscal year. Could you talk about that?
Well, the Senate actually did two things yesterday, Dan. What they did was they did a line item transfer, which is necessary in every budget. What that means is when you have a budget with like 1,600 line items in it, some of them are going to be over budget and some of them are going to be under budget toward the end of the year. And by law, we have to make certain that everything balances out. So the first thing we did was we said, okay, there's surpluses in the XYZ account and there's a deficit in the ABC account. We have to take the surplus out of XYZ and put it in ABC just to make certain that each account has enough money to pay the bills at the end of the year and take care of our obligations. Then we also, that itself did not involve raiding the rainy day fund. It was just a line item transfer from one account to another. Then we did the deficit mitigation plan, where we did take money from the rainy day fund, and we did take monies from other accounts to balance the budget. And we had to do that because if we didn't do that, we would have shortchanged the cities and towns. For example, the governor proposed rescinding $19 million, for example, of money that was earmarked for the cities and towns that they were counting on. So we did. The rainy day fund is really down to, I think it's $14 million now, which is a drop in the bucket when you're talking about $20 billion. But the real heavy work is ahead, of course, with the budget for 2017 and 18. And I do want to say something about, if I might, about that and the CBAC agreement. As you know, there's a lot of controversy floating around about this deal that's been negotiated between the governor and the state employee unions. And frankly, if that deal is ratified, it can never be fulfilled. It's not adequate to meet our deficit coming up, even though there's concessions on the table. And let me give you a good example of what is being asked of state employees. There's going to be a wage freeze for the next 3 years, and then they're entitled to salary increases of 3.5% in years 4 and 5. But in addition to that, they get a bonus in year 3, not a salary increase, a bonus of either $2,000 or $1,000 plus their step increase. A step increase, most step increases are 2.5% to 3.5% when they occur.
Wow.
So, and that's going to happen in years 4 and 5 as well. So basically, someone who's making $70,000 a year 5 years from now as a state employee will be making $80,000 a year. And that's under the CBAC concessions. They're going to be making 12-13% more than they are today. And it's not nearly enough to cover the deficit that we're looking at, and one of the conditions of the CBAC deal is no layoffs. Well, if we can't lay them off, that leaves only one other choice, and that's big tax increases. I'm adamantly opposed to that. The CBAC agreement, as much as I appreciate the fact that there's some concessions from the state employees, it really is not adequate to do the job, and I'm afraid that the public doesn't understand that. And I hope that more of these facts come to light so that the public is truly aware of what's going on.
Well, explain something to me. If you're a current state employee, let's say you've worked for the state 20 years, if this deal makes it to the rank and file for a vote, would you vote for it or would you vote against it on the premise you're better off now and let them lay off those who have only worked for the state 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, that's the dilemma. I mean, basically, it's not... While there are concessions in it, it's pretty generous in terms of if I were a state employee, been around for 20 years, because I'm going to keep my job no matter what. And at the end, as I say, if I haven't finished all my step increases haven't been talked about yet, but basically what they are, Dan and Brad, is kind of recognition, okay, you've been in the job, you've got experience, you're entitled to a step, an increase in your pay. And most of the bargaining units have tables. There's page after page of tables with these step increases, and for most positions, there's 10 step increases. So if you haven't finished your step increases, you're going to be getting that in addition to the pay increases that the governor's proposed.
What's this bonus? This $2,000 bonus?
I was going to ask you. What about the bonus?
Oh yeah, that's a little deal they snuck in there too. And in the third year, where there's still quote a salary freeze, they're going to get one of two things. You'll either get a $2,000 bonus or you'll get a $1,000 bonus plus your step increase. So if the step increase is 3%, you get that and you get a $1,000 bonus on top of that.
Wow.
If you don't have a step increase, you get $2,000.
So it's really not a salary freeze then?
No. Again, technically speaking, that's not a salary increase. It's a one-time deal and your salary stays what your salary is, but it's a bonus. So you're getting a bonus, which pretty much makes up for the fact that you're giving up the salary that year, but it's not called a salary increase.
I just want to ask a simple question, just listening to just what you said, okay? Just what you said. How can we possibly get out of the mess that we are in with all this going on?
With the CBAC agreement that's been proposed, it isn't even close to enough. And that's why I just think this is all political theater, because if they go ahead and approve it, we can't possibly balance the budget with that deal. It's not even close.
Well, I mean, I feel sorry for the governor because I'm sure he's got a sore arm patting himself on the back for this great deal that he negotiated. But what you're saying is it's not a great deal at all.
Not at all. It's not even close. It's just like the deal that they worked out 5 or 6 years ago. Remember, part of that deal was the employee suggestion box. It was supposed to save like $190 million.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, that wound up being, they didn't even try, didn't even act in good faith. They met once. There was no attempt to even follow up on that. It was just an excuse to plug a number in to say that we saved, like $190 million a year. And you know what was really going on, Dan and Brad, was they were praying and they were hoping that the economy would come roaring back and make up for all this stuff. But, of course, it didn't. Connecticut is dead last in terms of economic recovery among the states, and we're one of the worst in terms of the country, too. We basically recovered 75% of the jobs that we lost in the Great Recession, and at the same time, Massachusetts has almost tripled the number of jobs that they lost.
And
they,
also, Len, we got the Aetna taken off.
Yeah.
They're going to New York.
That's right. So we got GE going to Boston and Aetna going to New York. The insurance capital may not be the insurance capital anymore. And look, if you're running a big company and you're seeing one deficit after the other, and you see the legislature's only response is more and more taxes, what are you going to do? You've got to look and say, well, there's deficits as far as the eye can see. What are they going to do? They're going to continue to increase taxes. And it's not just the business loss itself. You've got a lot of high-paid execs that are leaving the state.
That's
now.
That's right.
You know, yep. 100 families basically had a $200 million resulted in $200 million of fewer tax collections because of the decreases in that income group. So we are really, the budget is not in a crisis stage. It's in catastrophe stage. It's beyond crisis. It's complete catastrophe. The whole thing is imploding. We're really in kind of a financial Armageddon, and I don't know if the public totally understands it yet, but there's a rumor going around the Capitol, by the way, that we're borrowing money next month just to meet payroll. And that's how bad it's getting.
Wow. That's wild.
So,
hey, look,
Senator,
we're going to
out of time, but this is so great.
Just tremendous.
We'll talk down the road,
yep.
And you have yourself a great day, Senator.
Thank you. It's great talking to you guys. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're welcome.